His love was as deep and wide as human love could reach. It was a love intensified by years of longing and dreaming. How could he sacrifice Isaac, whom he loved more than life itself? No doubt the old man, who had prayed with such daring importunity for his kindred in Sodom, now spent a night of agonizing intercession. But in the morning, he obeyed. With noble bravado, he concealed his grief and the nature of the journey from Isaac and the servants. 2 long days of travel toward Moriah. 2 long nights of unspeakable woe. Beneath the silent stars, Abraham fought within himself. If now he must offer his son, his only son, was it not better to have remained in Mesopotamia? True, he was rich, but so was his brother back in Haran, and Nahor had 12 stalwart sons. Abraham knew that the Canaanites and the Chaldeans sometimes offered to their implacable deities human sacrifice, but he reasoned that a God of steadfast love could not want such a bloody offering. Moreover, what of the divine promise and the covenant? In the darkness, he sought some comforting reassurance, but there was only silence and the rustle of the night wind and the soft breathing of Isaac. He mustered all of his spiritual resources. He believed in God, in his everlasting power and majesty. He had felt the presence of God, and God had spoken to him. Yes, as owner and creator, God had the right to demand even Isaac. He feared the Almighty. He remembered what had happened to Lot's wife. He remembered the punishments which the Lord had put upon those who disobeyed him. Yes, it was no light thing to disobey God. Yes, he believed in God. He feared God. He trusted God. Through all the years of waiting, although Abraham was most 100 years old when the child of promise came, he had not lost his faith. He had hoped against hope and grown strong in faith. Now he thought of Enoch's translation, of the way Noah and his family had been spared, of the miraculous birth of Isaac to a mother long past the age of childbearing, and he repeated to himself the words that God had spoken, "Is anything too hard for God?" He trusted God, and he loved God. He loved him increasingly and devotedly. Having walked with his hand in God through all these years, he loved God even more than he loved Isaac. And so, believing, fearing, trusting, loving, Abraham climbed the steep ascent of Mount Moriah, built an altar, laid thereon the wood, bound his son Isaac, and was ready to sacrifice him. And just as he raised the knife in hand, there was the angel and the ram. But Abraham, the faithful steward, had won the supreme victory. The Bible does not tell us anything about Isaac's heroism on Mount Moriah. He lived a life of inconsequential deeds and restricted ventures. He reopened the wells which his father Abraham had dug, but he built his own altars, for religion cannot be had by proxy. No doubt it was Isaac who taught his son how to tithe, for that was just exactly the proportion that Jacob vowed to the Lord at Bethel. Now, the story of that vow and the long period of time before it is paid is too long for this present sitting. We shall mention just a few highlights. A fugitive from the wrath of Esau, Jacob slept on the hillside, his head pillowed on a stone. During the night, he had a vision of ineffable beauty, myriads of angels ascending and descending from the hillside on which he slept to the very throne of the Most High. And he heard the voice of God giving to him, sinful Jacob, the very same covenant that he had given to Abraham, and promising, in addition, special protective care. In the morning, when Jacob arose, the vision was gone, but he felt that the presence of God was still there, and so he called the name of the place Bethel. And on his knees, he solemnly promised God that if he would give him safe journey and bring him back at length to the land of his birth, he would come to Bethel and erect there an altar and offer to God 1/10 of his possessions. Many years were to pass before that vow was paid. The fast-paced account of Jacob's sojourn in Mesopotamia is quite as entertaining as a first-rate novel. There is intrigue, conflict, romance, and some delightful humor. After 20 years, shrewd Jacob was very rich. He had not acquired, however, riches of domestic tranquility, for he had 4 contentious wives. And these wives had presented him with 11 children. His wives worshipped idols. No doubt Jacob had taught them a nominal allegiance to the Most High, but they kept their idols. Therefore, Jacob is to be remembered certainly as one who held to the religion of God, but countenanced his idol worship. We have not time to continue the story of Jacob, except to say that years later, he came back to Bethel, paid his vow, learned of God the difficult lesson that we go away from God when we fail in our stewardship. What do the altars of Genesis teach us? Faithfulness to God, and that the worship and offering at the altar is a solemn transaction between the soul and the Almighty.
Now this is the time for the organization of this annual meeting of Woman's Missionary Union. I recognize Mrs. Robert Fling, our recording secretary.
I move that those registered with the secretary be recognized as constituting the organization, and that those who shall register be added to the list.
Is there a second to the motion? Is there a discussion? If not, all favoring the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. I recognize Ms. Alma Hunt, Executive Secretary.
Madam President, I move that the program in the hands of the delegates, with any necessary changes, be the order of business.
Is there a second to the motion? Is there a discussion? If not, all favoring the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried.
And Madam President, I move that the reading of the minutes be dispensed with, and that the President, the Executive Secretary, and the Recording Secretary approve the minutes for publication.
Is there a second to this motion? Is there a discussion? If not, all favoring the motion will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. And now that we are duly organized, we want to do something very, very special. A few months ago, we were electrified and grateful. We realized that at last a long-time dream had come true. When Dr. Cornell Garner, Secretary for Africa, Europe, and the Near East, made the announcement that at last we were to help with Baptist work in the country of Liberia, West Africa. Dr. Garner is here on the platform this morning, and I should like for him to stand. Dr. Garner? Now, I know he would like to tell us all about his visit to Liberia, but we were a little afraid to let him come to the microphone for fear that he would take the entire morning session telling us about the visit which he and Dr. Coffin made recently to Liberia. Women's Missionary Union has never been more honored than it is in this meeting to have the Vice President of the country of Liberia as our very special guest. And this morning we welcome to this platform the Honorable W.R. Talbert, not only Vice President of Liberia, but the President of the Baptist Convention of Liberia and a Vice President of the Baptist World Alliance. The Honorable W.R. Talbert, may we greet him as he stands. And Dr. Talbert, would you remain standing as we introduce the Consul General of Liberia, Consul General David Thomas. And along with them, Secretary Charles McGee, who is here in the audience in the reserved section for our executive board and special guests. Welcome to our meeting, and we hope that you will enjoy the sessions of this convention. And you may be seated. Miss Ethelie Hamrick, editor of Royal Service, will serve as timekeeper for this convention. Now we have some announcements to make. Could we possibly have a meeting of Women's Missionary Union without announcements? I shall make the first one, and then Miss Alma Hunt will come and make all the others. And you notice I underlined all. You hold in your hand our program. It's the largest program you've ever had. You cannot hide it in your purses unless you have one of these brand new big suitcase purses. And I hope you don't have one. For you're only entitled to one, just one. Last year in Miami, we had 6,000 programs printed and we ran out the first morning. And the auditorium in which we met had only 3,400 seats in it. This one has 3,700 seats in it. They're not all filled yet. Others will be coming this afternoon, and others tonight, and others tomorrow. And these who come must have a printed program, so please take real good care of it. This is a souvenir program. This is a brochure. We are celebrating the 75th anniversary of our Sunbeam Band, organization for our children, birth through 8. And this is something that you must keep always. So please take good care of it. And don't take another one when you come through the doors, even though the ushers may offer you one if they do not see the one which you have in hand. So take care of it and keep this program. Now, Miss Hunt.
Madam President, before I bring the things on my list, may I suggest that greetings go this morning to Mrs. W.C. James, Mrs. W.J. Cox, Mrs. George R. Martin, former presidents of Women's Missionary Union. I was reminded to do that now because of the greetings that we have, greetings that have come to us from Mrs. James and Mrs. Cox. And we have greetings this morning from the Cuba Women's Missionary Union. Greetings came prior to today from the Brazilian Women's Missionary Union, from the Japan Women's Missionary Union, from the president of the North American Baptist Women's Union. These greetings will be responded to by the members of our greetings committee. Now, on the arm of your seat this morning when you came in, you found, perhaps, I hope, an information meeting bulletin, a little yellow sheet that we had printed giving you information as to where you can find bookstores, exhibits, information, all of the things that you will need while you're here, nurseries for those of you who have children. If you did not find those sheets, the extra ones will be placed in the foyer, and you may get them as you leave this session. Somewhere in the upper foyer or in the lower foyer. Now, there are a few announcements in addition to those that are on that sheet. One is that after the sheet was printed, We were able to make arrangements to have the cafeteria in this building serve meals today at noon, this evening for the dinner meal, tomorrow at noon, and tomorrow evening. If you have been in this area before, you are aware of the fact that there are not eating places close by. And we felt that this would be a very great service to all of us to have this cafeteria in the building open. Now, at the close of this session, if you will go out of any of the rear doors of this auditorium and down the stairs, you will find two entrances into the cafeteria from the lower foyer, the foyer in which you registered and through which most of you entered the building today. If you're in the balcony, you may get the elevator and not stop on this floor, but go on down to the floor below, and you will find yourselves right at the entrance to the cafeteria. And so we offer this to you for your convenience. It will keep you from being rushed during the noon hour or even during the evening dinner hour if you desire to stay in this building. At the rear of this auditorium, there's quite an ample foyer with sofas and chairs, and you may use that to rest in between the sessions. Now, there's another announcement, a very important one, for it comes from the police department. And so will you please listen. At the information desk table, which is in the lower foyer, there are stickers for those of you who drove to St. Louis and desire guest stickers for your automobiles. Now, these guest stickers do not entitle you to violations, or certainly not to this violation, and so will you please be listening. There are along the streets adjacent to this auditorium signs that say no parking after 4 p.m. Now, even a guest sticker is not going to allow you or not going to allow your car to remain there after 4 p.m. The car will be towed away at 4 p.m. at your expense. And so may I urge you not to park for the afternoon sessions on the streets that say no parking after 4 p.m. You will not get the most out of the program if you have your eye on your watch all the time so that you'll be sure to get out by 4 o'clock. Neither will you make the program mean the most to other people if you come in with the intention of leaving before adjournment. We'll probably be adjourned by that time, but we would prefer that you not park, please, on those streets that say no parking after 4 p.m. for the afternoon session. You have already heard the beginning of the book, Christian Sharing of Possessions. I have a copy of it here, the first copy I have seen. I had not seen a copy until Mrs. Ushery came backstage this morning, so you know it's fresh off the press. A copy hasn't even been sent to Birmingham. Now, Mrs. Mathis took for granted that every one of you was going to buy a copy, and certainly we urge you to do so. You will want a copy anyway for our study. It's much better for you to get a copy here, be among the first to have it, and have Mrs. Ushery's autograph. Now, at the close of this session and at the close of the afternoon session, Mrs. Ushery will be autographing the books which will be for sale in the foyer to the rear of this auditorium. Dr. Gorner, who has already been presented, wrote the Foreign Mission Graded Series book for our study this fall, and Dr. Gorner will be out autographing those books, which you may get in advance. There will be other books in the foyer, and we shall make announcements about them at subsequent times. But there is another that we would like every person who comes to take home with her. This is a book so new off the press that Mrs. Mathis hadn't seen it until I arrived here, for one had just come from the printer as I was leaving Birmingham. It is The Story of Cousin George by Helen Mansell. Now, Cousin George, surely you know who he is or who he was. It was Cousin George Braxton Taylor, the founder of the Sunbeam Band. And this evening, in our evening session, you will come to be aware of the great contribution that Dr. Taylor made as he organized the first Sunbeam Bands in our convention. This delightful book has been written by an author who had already proved herself as she had given to our convention the story of Lottie Moon. And so now she brings to us the story of this son of a great missionary family, the grandson of the Foreign Mission Board Secretary. Which one was it, Dr. Gorner? Dr. George Boardman Taylor. That was his father, Dr. Gorner. You're mixed up, too. His father was a missionary to Italy. And this young man spent his boyhood days in Italy. And so the story begins with him as a boy there on a mission field, and then coming back to the States, making the great decision as to whether he should follow in the steps of his father and return after getting his education here to the mission field, or whether he should spend his life here in the pastorate organizing mission societies for children. It is a delightful story for every one of you to read, but it is written in the language of a primary, so that the primary child can read it. And so you will want to take one home to your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, your neighbors, the children in your sunbeam bands, any little child you know who would love and cherish this book always. This, too, will be on sale in the foyer at the close of the morning session and at the close of the afternoon session. Now, I think I failed to say one thing that the police said, and I must get all the police news to you. The policeman said, please do not leave any clothes in your car, no matter if the car is locked. And so if you left your clothes in there this morning, please don't rush out of the meeting, but just hope and pray that they'll be there at noon and then take them out during the noon hour.
Well, there one other announcement which we regret very much to make. On Sunday evening, we received word that Dr. Nanny Helen Burroughs, for many, many years president of the Baptist Women's Group of the National Baptist Convention, had passed away. Her funeral is to be tomorrow, and we would like for Women's Missionary Union to send flowers for that funeral, and I'm sure that that is your desire. It takes many long months of preparation for an annual meeting like this. The women in St. Louis and surrounding territories have not been idle as they have looked toward this day and your coming. They have had many meetings, some of them with us, some of them as groups, and then chairmen with their groups in preparation for this hour. The chairman of our hostess committees is the wife of the executive secretary of our Baptist work here in St. Louis. Mrs. Homer DeLozier has worked tirelessly. She has been bothered morning, noon, and night. Her last telephone call from this president was at midnight last night. And so we're so grateful to the women of St. Louis under the leadership of Mrs. Homer DeLozier for all that they have done and for all that they shall do. I recognize Mrs. DeLozier.
Madam President, in behalf of the St. Louis Women's Missionary Union, it's my great joy to extend to you a very warm and cordial welcome to our city. For some of you, this is your very first visit to St. Louis, and we want you to know that we're glad you came. Others, I am sure, have been here for other sessions of Southern Baptist Convention, and we would like to think that you have been prompted to come again because of pleasant memories at those visits. We have anticipated your coming now for several months, and we hope that we have prepared to meet your every need. As you know, in order to have such a meeting as this, we must begin with smaller units in our churches. Women's Missionary Union in our city came as an outgrowth of mothers' clubs in our churches. In 1872, there were enough of these missionary societies in the various churches to be organized into an associational organization. In 1957, we entertained Missouri WMU, and they helped us celebrate our 85th anniversary. We think it's quite significant that now you have come to our state the very year in which we are observing our 85th anniversary of Missouri Women's Missionary Union. for it was in 1876, just 4 years after St. Louis Woman's Missionary Union was organized, that there were sufficient numbers of associational organizations to form our state WMU. And we're glad you have come to our state to help us celebrate this anniversary. There are some very interesting things about our city which we want to share with you. Metropolitan St. Louis occupies an area of more than 1.5 million acres with a population of 2 million. Our city is famous for its industry. The first filling station in the world was here in St. Louis. Perhaps one reason for that is because we rank second as a motor carrier center of the continent. More than 5,000 trucks are rolling into, through, or out of St. Louis daily. St. Louis has the leading hog market and the leading raw fur market of the world. St. Louis also has the second largest automobile assembly center in America. Union Station is the world's largest mechanized mail handling facility and the second largest rail center in the nation. St. Louis has the only public museum devoted exclusively to forms of transportation. Not only is our city famous for its industry, it is famous for art and music. It has the world's largest outdoor theater and the second largest indoor arena in America. St. Louis's famous Shaw's Garden has the largest collection of plant life in the Western Hemisphere. Just this year, there has been added to this garden the world's largest geodesic dome greenhouse. And this climatron even has its own artificial sun and moon. Another point of interest is Forest Park, which covers 1,400 acres and is the second largest city park in the United States. Here you find the zoological gardens and the art museum. The space capsule, so recently used to send the first man into space from our continent, was made here at McDonnell Aircraft Corporation. Most of the world's great cities have identifying symbols. The mention of Eiffel Tower brings to mind Paris, and the Empire State Building evokes New York. In the years to come, the symbol of St. Louis, in the eyes of the world, will be the graceful stainless steel arch, towering 630 feet above the riverfront. The arch itself will symbolize the historic role that St. Louis has played as the gateway to the West. The completion of this arch, which is now under construction, is planned for 1963 at an estimated cost, with its memorial park, of $30 million. Construction will be of reinforced concrete sheathed in stainless steel, with elevators running to the top, where will be a glass-enclosed observation tower where visitors will be able to see for miles. Come back again and see this steel arch. The oldest Baptist church west of the Mississippi is at the western edge of our city. It is Fethi Church, and many important names in pioneer Baptist history are related to this church. Among those names are Thomas Musick and John Mason Peck. Old Bethel Church in the southern part of our state was organized 1 year prior to Fethi. But after 30 years of service, it passed out of existence because it became anti-missionary. I am sure it had no Woman's Missionary Union to keep alive within it the spirit of missions. As we visited the site of Old Bethel, we found that all that remains there is a fenced-in cemetery, standing as mute evidence of the fact that without a vision of missions, our purpose for living will cease. Why it is and how it is, I do not know. But that it is, I am certain. For God's word says, "Whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's shall save it." From the beginning of this oldest church in our area, with this continued history, the St. Louis Association has grown. There are now a total of 300 churches and 100,000 Baptists, including our national Baptists. Also located in our city is the oldest Baptist hospital in the world, Missouri Baptist Hospital. This hospital is supplying our first aid room for this meeting and staffing it with their nurses. All of the Baptists of St. Louis welcome you. Now I want you to know the ones who have been planning and working for your coming, and they will likewise serve you during your stay. First, I present Mrs. Lewis May.